another edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I'm your host, Dougie Almeida. And I'm joined today by fellow comedians, Mr. Mike Merrifield.
Hello.
And Phil Kors. What's up, fellas?
Hey, now.
As we go, always open the show. It's generally the last time we saw each other. And the last time we saw each other, Phil, you actually picked me up from the airport, which is always
I did. That was awesome, man. I love that. At the Cactus Comedy Classic, which was pretty cool, Arizona.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, that was great. I'm so happy to be back with you.
Absolutely. I guess the only thing I could do now is ask you to help me move or perhaps help me manscape. I don't know what else would be more.
I do have a truck and I do have a shaver. So,
well, that's what it takes. And Mike, I think the last time and first time we met was at the World Series of Comedy main event when it was in the Kansas City area a couple of years ago.
I feel like I think it was St. Louis, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's in the area, I guess.
I know it's really weird because it was Kansas City, it was Kansas, St. Louis, and Missouri, and it's St. Louis, Kansas. I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard to keep track.
There was a river in between, and right. I saw the arches from the shitty hotel.
It's one of those weird things. Like, I think that is the first time we met, but I feel like, I don't know. It's a weird thing with comics. Like, I feel like I've met everybody. Like, Phil, I feel like we've worked together, haven't we?
I don't think so, but we probably have, though. That's the thing.
Your name looked familiar. Everything seemed familiar. That could be what it is, maybe.
Maybe we parted in your shed before.
That could be, yeah. A lot of people have.
Yeah, so.
You got a party shed?
I thought he was in his party shed.
No, I'm borrowing a friend's set right now. And the true fans of his will know who it is based on the things on this shelf back here, but. I got a good buddy who's a YouTuber, and he's letting me use his setup because I don't have a setup.
Well, that's a nice setup. I really like the eclecticness of that. I mean, you got Jack Daniels, you got a bowling trophy, you got some beer. I mean, boy, that says a lot. You know, you could just look at that setup.
It's really not even a setup. It's legit his shed, and he just put some cameras in it. So yeah. There wasn't much decorating that took place.
Oh, so there wasn't much art behind that. It was just...
No, that's just that stuff was already there.
Capture a moment and label it forever. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, the Cactus Comedy Classic at Stir Crazy Comedy Club was a lot of fun. I found out that the people in Glendale, Arizona kind of are my people.
Oh, yeah. You did great, man. I remember the fire you brought on stage. That was perfect.
Oh, man. I it's always weird when you do it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I when I go on stage, I'm going to perform and do a show. I'm one way. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to relax. But something about these festivals and I just never feel the same. Like, I just think too much. Sometimes I just overthink it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's tough. It's tough because you're in a competition and there's so many rules in a competition. There's so many things you have to follow. And you're like, you know, you're worried about, you know, performing at your A game and being your best and impressing the industry. And I think that those are, you know, what all comedians go through. But I also think that those are like the things where it's like almost like you got to let go of all that. And it's just like just another show. Just, you know, you're going to rock it. You're going to do your best and like, you know, try your best to eliminate those. Cause it is like one of those things where, you know, you get deceived when you don't get first place, even though you killed the room. It's like one of those things, it messes with you because you're like, why didn't I win? But it's also like, you know, just think about all the, you know, when you go through the whole competition, it's like, just like a normal comedy show, like, you know, people at the beginning, you know, they're already judged, you know, like per that round. But it's like, after that, it's like, you know, somebody could have a really killer set. And then they end up, you know, doing better or whatever it is. It's just like, it's just so many factors to it. But when it comes down to it, it's like, I think it's all about the networking and like meeting the people that you want to meet. I think that's what's going to keep it going. And that's the most important thing to me.
And you guys with the Broken Drift, you guys do a great, you guys run a good organization, a good show. Everything's professional, you know, and that's always good. Mike, have you been in a festival? Like, are you like a,
yeah,
you
know, I've done a bunch of them, and I think they're the worst thing for comedy. I mean, they're good for the networking aspect, but there's no way to have a good set unless, like Phil said, you really have to approach it like, this is just another show. I don't care what happens. You know, you just go up and do it. But I don't think comedy should ever be a competition. You should never. We're all technically in competition with each other anyway in this business, but to narrow it down like that and. It just, it makes people harbor bad feelings. You feel crappy about how it went. It's just, I don't think anything about it is good. I mean, a festival where it's not a competition, that's what it's all about. But when you add that competition, you're going to pick a winner. Like, it's all so subjective. I don't know how you pick a winner. It doesn't make sense.
Well, yeah, that's what I was kind of saying too, is like, you know, that's very hard too, because some of these competitions, I'm like one of the judges, and it's like, man, how do you even like pick between, you know, like people that are really like, there's sometimes the lineups are like perfect. It's like just like an overall great show. Right. And for me as a comedian, I want the audience to remember the entire night and not just like one comedian. If they remember the whole night, then they're going to come back. And so like, it's like, it is extremely tough. And I think it's just like, you know, if more competition or more festivals were less competition and more about networking and stuff like that, I think that would be a more, you know, positive thing to promote.
Started it is the Last Comic Standing. And it had a lot of implications. It first of all, it set the whole precedent for, we need to have people, comedians, compete against each other. And you see it in clubs all the time, man. The first time I ever really noticed it and kind of understood what was happening, I was working with my buddy Dave Landau. And people would come up, we're doing a co-headline show, we're flip-flopping. And people inevitably, every show would come up and tell us, you know, oh, you were my favorite, or hey, I liked you better than the other guy. You know, it's like, oh, you mean my friend of 15 years? Like, yeah. You don't have to tell me that. Like, this isn't American Idol. I think, you know, all of that stuff, they started the whole competition thing. I think it's poison for comedy. It shouldn't be about that. No one should ever tell you you're better than the other guy. Like, it's, you know, and what's weird is that they want to tell you that. They want, like, they think that's a good thing. Like, I'll make him feel good. I'll tell him he's better than the other guy. But like, that's my friend you're talking about, like that. And first of all, I'm not better than Dave Landau. That dude's friggin' hilarious. Like, so, you know. I mean, yeah. I get it, but I don't like the competition of it at all. I mean, it's all subjective.
I've been in both. I've been in the festival where you're showcasing, and I've been in the competition. And obviously, the showcasing is a lot less pressure. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a different thing. But what I also learned is that, like you guys said, when it is a competition, my only goal is to go there and do my best and have a good time. You know, one way or the other, I'm not going to, you know, I mean...
That's our opinion now. I mean, but I'll be honest, the first couple ones I went to, I was terribly bummed out that I didn't, you know, even move on to the next level. And, you know, I did all the, well, I was funnier than that guy, you know, all that crap. And it's like, that shouldn't even be brought into it. This is an art. Yeah. It's not something you compete at. It's not a sport. The fact that even gets entered into it at all is, I think it's horrible for comedy, man.
I see. Yeah. I mean, I know as a performer, like I technically I'm pretty into it where I'll know in the first few minutes, more or less, if that was an advancing set, you know, if that was one that's going to,
yeah, you know,
you know what I mean? And there's ones that, you know, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if I didn't get picked, you know?
Right. Right.
And I think as the artist, that's to me is the most important thing, you know?
Well, I'll be real honest with you, man. I had one of the biggest meltdowns I've ever had in my career was at a comedy festival, yeah. Competition. And I mean, I guess I'll just tell the story. It was the San Francisco Comedy Festival. And, you know, there's a series of rounds. You do all of these shows on the road. Anyway, it came down to me and one other guy, and I ended up losing. And I just snapped, dude. I was drunk, and I cussed out the guy running the competition. I didn't think I should have lost. And it was one of the most embarrassing moments of my career. I completely let it get to me. And I acted like a total ass, and I wish I could take it back. But I was hammered. I went in. I thought I was talking to, they had this one guy that worked for the festival that kept track of the math. They're like, there was all this crazy math they did with the scorekeeping. And I thought I was cussing him out, you know. And I found out the next day that everyone was in that green room. Like all the other comics were in there. The guy that owns the festival was in there. I was so drunk, I didn't even know that I had literally made an ass out of myself in front of everyone. So I guess maybe this is more of a lesson about drinking than it is about comedy competitions. But yeah, it was horrible.
I don't think it's ever a good idea to be drinking heavily and then go to state your opinion in any circumstance.
Well, I mean, isn't that what we do as Americans?
Yeah. As we drink up and share opinion. I've had other comics ask me about it. I go, look, man, the whole idea is like win, lose, or draw. You go to the show up and showcase to get in front of people that you never, you know, if you look at it that way, you know, maybe it is better, but the, you know, it is hard to judge. I mean, you know, there's a deadpan comic and there's a high energy comic. How are you going to judge which one's better? You know, and I mean, I would hate to be a judge. I mean, that's the, if you think about it, I would not like to be a judge like Phil, like you do, you know?
Yeah, and it's tough too. And there's a, you know, there's also competitions where, like, you know, the bringer, you know, the one of the criteria is audience, is reaction. You know what I mean? Like when they cheer or whatever. So it's like if they have 15 people out there that are friends, you know, it's like most of the time they're going to cheer for their friend. You know, that's what makes it one of those things. But I'll share a quick story. I was in a comedy competition in Miami-Dade County. I thought it was just Miami, and it was just like, you know, the whole county. And it was just like, it was in a Haitian restaurant. It was advertised as like this big old festival, and it was just like this, like I ate crap the whole time. It was like, I was like a new comedian. I only had like 5 minutes of Disney material, and it just like was the worst. But it was like, it was kind of bad, because like I bombed that first day, and I was like in Florida for 4 days, and I was like, well, what do I do now? Kind of thing. I'm just like, well, I'm already out of this competition. But it was like kind of nice at the same time, because then I was like, I came back and I knew that I wasn't advancing, but it was just like, just to watch everyone else do their thing, make some friends. And that's like kind of how I took the whole thing, was just that I made more friends out of that situation that was like performance wise, but it was like, you know, these are my friends now that have been my friends for a long time in the comedy world. Yeah. So I think there's like a little bit of hidden gems. You know what I mean? Like the comedy competition is not perfect, but it's also just like, it is a chance for you to meet your friends and to meet people that will, you know, can help you in later shows, no matter how good or bad you do. Yeah. That's how I take them, just because I do think the competition is like, is very tough in the comedy world, because we're already competing for stage time as it is. And it's like, we don't need to do that. We can all grow together. We can all create together. And, you know, if that was less of a factor, even if you go to a competition knowing that like, okay, I make it dead last, but my goal is to at least talk to the industry, talk to my fellow comics or whatever. And then like, you know, get, you know, just to get to know people. Cause I feel like even, you know, knowing you from Florida, knowing like people from around the country is always like good too, because then you ever get your own private gigs, you hit somebody up, you know, that's always somewhere that you can crash or, you know, just keep collaborating on, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think for newer comics that aren't touring around, it's a great way to get experience to regionally different. That was my, when I first started going to comedy festivals, that was what a learning experience for me. I'm like, wow, I'm meeting comics in the Northwest and I'm their style. I'm meeting, you know, you're just getting out of your home area and you're kind of realizing, you realize another thing too, that there's a lot of people with similar jokes. That, you know, they're like, oh, you know, my friend tells a joke like that. My other friend, you know, you, you realize how small that is, you know, when it comes to material. You know, I share with this with you guys. I was actually at a comedy festival this weekend, and if you already know, my brother had passed away. So I was actually in that position where, you know, A, do I attend my brother's funeral or do I go to a comedy festival? And, you know, I mean, I set up everything. I took care of everything for the services for my brother. And without a long story short, I was going to be there, but something changed with other members who couldn't make it. So I didn't want to cancel and lose like $1,000 in travel costs, you know, as one thing. But, you know, as comics, you know, as you make a decision like that, I mean, there was a couple people that said, I can't believe you missed your brother's funeral for a comedy fest, you know. But I decided to do that because thinking of how my brother would have wanted me to do it. You know,
well, and I'm trying to make it funny, but I don't think he noticed. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know your brother, but I'm assuming he would have told, like, I know when my sister died, one of the first things I did is went right to that stage. Cause there's nothing. I mean, it made me feel better. It made me feel like it didn't happen. So I feel like he would have been cool with that. And funerals suck anyway, dude. You know?
Yeah. I you're right. I mean, cause that, you know, it was hard. It was hard to perform with that in the back of my head, but that was my first thought, Mike, was like, you know, I really, for me to deal with this, I really want to do what I need to do. You know,
yeah, you get,
give me away.
You know, it's our drug. So when, in a time of need, you ran to your, you went to, you didn't run, but you went to your drug, you know, to feel good about yourself for a little while. So,
well, you know, my fat ass ain't running anywhere.
I walked at a quick pace, I guess.
Quickly walked to it. Well, I appreciate the backing on it. But,
I don't think there's a right or wrong, you know, I mean, everyone handles death differently. Everyone handles everything differently. And that was like maybe a moment where you just like, you may have connected more with your brother just being away from that situation than like, you know, being there. Like, I mean, I think that that's like, Mike is right. It's like a sad time. It's not really like that fun. It's like, you want to, everything about your brother, you want to remember everything happy and joyful and everything that you can share. And that's like, comedy is like bringing that, you're like bringing the light. So it's like, you're almost like you're letting your brother's light still shine by doing what you're doing. So I don't think you're in the wrong.
And it's $1,000, man. I mean, that's a lot of money too. I mean, you know, with the pandemic and everything, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was supposed to be funny. I didn't mean for you guys just stare at me oddly when I said that. I'm sorry.
No, but listen, it is what it is. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't, you know, like, you know, you book these things, you know, and I was actually mad because originally when I booked it, I booked just one, like one way flight. Because like you were saying, Phil, nothing worse than going to a festival for like 4 or 5 days and getting eliminated in the first day.
Right. You're like, okay. You're
hanging around like a dope all week. You know, hey, you
all those people that saw you lose, like see you walk and they look at you like, yeah, I saw it. Buddy.
Oh, remember me? I lost. Hi, guys.
Remember me? I bombed in front of my peers earlier. You remember that?
Right. Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aren't you supposed to leave? But I did that. You know, I was like, oh, I'm just going to get a one-way ticket. I'm going to get the hotel for one night. And then I was looking it over. I'm like, I hate just deal, you know, and I looked at, and I didn't recognize anybody in the list. I thought, okay, there's a good chance I may. Because sometimes you look at a list of who you're competing against. You're like,
oh, yeah. Like, I'm not even going. Forget it. Yeah. I've definitely done that.
I'm going to the funeral.
Yeah.
You know, but
I'll go to somebody else's funeral. I don't want to go compete with these guys.
Exactly. I'll take somebody to the airport to help them move. Exactly. So, you know, it was interesting, but I ended up changing it. And of course, I got stuck and, you know, it is what it is.
Sometimes, like Phil said, though, hanging out at those festivals, I did the Boston Comedy Festival and got kicked out of it right away and totally felt like crap for the first day. And then Tom Simmons was in it. And so my buddy that had driven out there with me, we made it our goal to go to every one of Tom Simmons' shows and cheer and laugh like assholes to just try to get as much to get them as far as we could. And we got them all the way to the finals. Like we would get applause breaks going with other audience members. It was so fun. And in hindsight, I feel that was early in my career, but in hindsight, I'm like, well, that was kind of crappy to do to all those other comedians. You know what I mean? To help Tom, like, not that he couldn't have done it on his own, but we were definitely helping him by getting applause breaks and stuff going. So,
well, I'm sure you guys weren't the only two people clapping. You know, I mean,
it's not like it was just us. Not like he was bombing and then two people kept starting applause breaks. Yeah, you're right. But we were laughing so hard. It was so fun, man. And, you know, that was 15 years ago. And I remember like it was yesterday. And, you know, had I got back on a plane or got back in my car and left the second I got taken out, I would have never had that experience. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And Tom would have never made it to second place.
No.
No way.
But like you said, it's how we deal with it. And I love the camaraderie aspect of it, you know, because some of these festivals, that's what it's like. You know, I mean, you get to see the same people. Like some festivals, it's like summer camp. You know, you see these people again and you just get to hang out and see each other. And there is nothing better. I mean, I remember the first time, and this comes from the first time I really went to LA, you know, and I was at Ha Ha Comedy Club at the, at their party, and Joey Medina had, you know, says, come by and hang out, you know, and I was doing some stuff and I was in there and who do I know? And then next thing you know, I'm talking to somebody, like 15 people come up. Hey, Dougie. Hey, Dougie. Hey, Dougie. And the one guy's like, I thought you weren't from here. Like, you know, but it's all from booking shows and having shows booked in Florida, seeing people on the road, meeting them.
Yeah, I had the exact same experience at the Improv in LA. I walked in thinking, oh man, I'm a fish. I'm not going to know anyone. And I freaking knew everyone in there. And everybody was like, oh, what's up, Merrifield? I was like, oh man, I was so nervous to come in here.
Yeah.
But that camaraderie, man, that goes a long way. And that, you know, you're dealing with the death of a family member. You want to be with your comrades, man. You want to be with your friends that can make horrible jokes about it and make you feel better. And, yeah, you know,
exactly.
You can't be with a normal person in that time. You got to be with a comic.
Right. Yeah,
that's also, it's like cool because like in that situation, I mean, like the comedy world is a lot smaller than you think. So like, you know, you have your Jim Brewers, and then like just below that is our level of like, you know, working comedians who, you know, may not have a ton of TV credits or been on late night, but like, you know, they're in the scene, they're there all the time, we're all working. So it's like that just that one step below, or, you know, even like almost like close to that level of, you know, professionalism. I feel like, you know, once you start seeing the same people, you're like, wow, I am in this world. I am a part of this comedy community, because like, you know, you start seeing the same people, you're like, wow, okay, like this is what we're here for. We're here to keep working together and keep like, you know, growing this generation of comedy and comedians, and like keep going it. Like, you know, 10 years down the road, we better still be doing podcasts and better be doing movies and doing everything that we're doing, because like, this is the time for all of us to keep growing and shining, I think.
Absolutely. You know, and you're right. The camaraderie thing's big, because it is great. You know, especially when you may be down and somebody comes up, somebody said something when I got there tonight, he goes, oh, you know, I'm going to, oh, I haven't seen you. You do a lot of stuff. Just anything, you know, makes you feel good. It's like, oh, people recognize. Oh yeah. Somebody said they watched one of my podcasts. They're like, I watched it. And, you know, I usually don't like to watch podcasts, but I watched about 30 seconds of yours.
I was going to say, that's one of the things that I always loved when I started doing comedy, is like, I didn't play sports when I was young. I obviously never ran with a gang. I didn't have like a a tight group of friends. And when I started doing comedy, even when I sucked, like I was a year in, all these big headline comics would come through the club and they would treat me, you know, like not like an equal, but like an equal, like a human being, you know. And I loved it. They didn't like treat me as a lesser human because I sucked and I only had 5 minutes. And I've always tried to have that same mentality. You know, whenever I always hang out with open micers, I always go to the open mics if the clubs have them. People are people, man. And I've always loved that about this business is that, you know, I mentioned Tom Simmons. He's a friend of mine. I've probably only hung out with Tom Simmons 3 times in 20 years, but I consider him one of my good friends, you know, but I've actually only seen him 3 times in person. But sometimes that's all it takes is one cool weekend at a comedy club with another dude and your friends for forever, you know?
That's crazy because, like, I've only hung out with Doug like 3 or 4 times. I consider him like one of my best friends in the comedy world.
It's crazy. It's how it works, man. It's such a crazy community. I love it.
We couldn't even remember if it was New York or where the hell.
I was like, do we have LA? Where was it? Where did we meet? I guess it was the North Hollywood Comedy Festival, I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, dude, I could have sworn we've been performing before that, but.
But I think we ended up doing something that may, I don't know if it was a Broadway comedy club or something in New York one time. We didn't really talk much, but we were in the same area. And then it was the NoHo Comedy Festival where we were out there on the 19th.
Hard to remember. When comics, like I'll work with a comic and I always say, hey, you know, I always make a point of going, if I've met you in the past, I'm sorry, I don't remember. Like, you know, hey, nice to see you, Phil, if I've met you before. Because I never remember, but. I forget. I had a point when I started saying this, but it just completely left my head. Carry on, fellas.
Well, going off your point is like, I've learned something that I never say nice to meet you. I always say nice to see you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a Hollywood thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is this confusing thing where, Phil, I honestly thought we may have worked together before. Like, it's such a weird thing where, you know, I'll work with a comic and they'll go, oh, yeah, we did this gig. We did North Platte, Nebraska in 1997. And some guys get a little weird when you don't remember, but it's like, you know, you're asking me to remember a Friday at work from 1997. Yeah. Like, this is a job. I do it every week. You know, I don't remember where I worked 2 weeks ago, let alone individual. I forgot I smoked weed with Bob Saget in a limo at a strip joint. How do you forget something like that? How do you forget a memory like that? Oh, yeah. Could be the weed. Yeah, I guess.
The weed smoking.
I guess I answered my own question. Never mind.
How could you forget smoking weed with somebody? but yeah, you're right. And you know, that's one of the things. That's one of the pet peeves my wife has always said about comics. You know, because my wife would meet a lot of comics and they'll come up there. Oh, nice to meet you. My wife, like, I met this guy like 10 times already. You
know, yeah.
He's your friend. He doesn't pay any attention to the wife. You know, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, so we can. I mean.
Yeah,
you know, it could be worse. He'd be trying to bang you. You know, he'd be trying to like.
Yeah, if I wasn't here, he'd remember your name. Exactly. He'd remember if he met you.
he'd be interested all of a sudden. You know, I was having a conversation with somebody about material. You know, and you know, turning over material and writing material. Like one of my things I'm working on now is I had an opportunity. Somebody was going to help me. You know, maybe go to the dry bar, get in dry bar. I had that the connection, and I basically had to look at the person. I go, look, I don't got 25-35 minutes I could do in front of Mormons right now. You know, and I was honest. I didn't want to do it. So that since then, all I've been doing is trying to write 35, 40 minutes of that material. So I have that focus. But my question to you guys was, what is like the most important aspect or element or composition of your material? Like if you like some people say, well, it's got to be autobiographical. I don't want to make up just jokes. I want them to relate to somehow my life. Right. But if you guys can answer that, like what any particular aspects of the material you're writing or coming up with. What are some of the most important aspects of it?
I mean, I would say just like, you know, finding that, like if any of your audience members can find one thing that they can relate to within themselves, then, you know, they're going to connect with you on a deeper level. So it's like just finding that little thing, little phrase, little sentence that they can just be like, okay, I'm likable. I'm endearing. I am going to take them on a journey. So it's like, that's like important just to find that little bit of you know, endearing moments that I think you can share with the audience that like, you know, you don't necessarily have to start off so raw and or like split the audience. I think that it's like important to really have the audience grasp them and then like, you know, get them to feel for who you are as like a person, like, you know, I mean, that's the whole point is like for you to, you know, be up on stage and it almost be like a conversation. Like you're just thinking of topics on the fly, almost thing. You know, I mean, that's the beauty of the art. It's just like, you're just up there talking. So like just my goal is always just to to start off and try to find something that can be relatable and on a universal level, which is like, you know, it's not easy all the time, but like, you know, we're all kids once we, you know, people can relate to having kids or like, you know, all the things that we can all like relate to is just like how I would like to start. And then like, you know, obviously go wherever it goes, but I really try to like, try to be as endearing as possible from the beginning. So that way I can get the whole audience on my side.
Part of it, Mike.
Yeah, I think it's it depends on what style of writer you are. If you're like a setup punchline type writer, that none of these things that Phil just said really apply because you're just kind of reciting it to them. but I 100% agree with what you said about the comfort level and making it look conversational, because the best comics in the world make it look like it's off the cuff. The best comics, somebody said this once, you know you're seeing a good comic when people in the audience are like, I could do this. I could probably do stand-up. Yeah. You know, like when you see someone that's that conversational, it makes other people want to do it. And as we're talking about this, I was thinking what's interesting about Mark Norman is Mark Norman makes it look like it's off the cuff, but it's also still really, really well-written setup punchline jokes, but in this really confident conversational manner. Like it's not obvious he's doing jokes, it's he's talking, but they're also really brilliant setup punchline jokes. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, I think I agree. That's a perfect reference too, because I think he nails the casualness, everything. Like he just like chill on stage, but then like, you know, he just hits you with the zinger and he just like rips that rug right from under you and you're like, wow, yeah. I didn't even see that coming. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah, it looks effortless, but it's brilliant. It's amazing what he's doing. And there's so many comics in my career, man, that you watch him work and you just go, man, I'll never be that good. Like, why do I even try? I'll never be that good. And Mark Norman's one of those guys. Brian Regan, the first time I saw him, I was like, why am I even bothering? You know, why do I even get on stage? I'll never be that good. I mean, not that that's what it's about, but it definitely makes you feel like that when you see people that good. You're like, damn, that dude's good, man.
Well, how is it not? Like, you know, even like we talk about the contest, you know, you can fall into that. You know, you could say, you know, like, yeah, I didn't advance on my show, but everybody, you know, the people who did, everybody had a funny set, you know? So it was like, it wasn't like, and, but you know, so of course like, it could have been, who knew, but until you ask yourself, I'm like, well, maybe I'm not doing it right. Maybe, you know what I mean? And you're right. I've seen people do that where I've gone, oh shit, you know, I need to go be a karaoke guy or something.
Yeah, like watching. I had the pleasure of watching Geraldo, you know, 15 years ago, you know, before anybody really knew who. I mean, everybody knew who he was, but he wasn't as big. But I just remember, like 10 minutes in, I was like, I'm not even doing what he's doing. Like what he's doing is so next level, man. And there's so many guys out there. I mean, it is what it is. You know, I can only do what I can do, but. But yeah, it is. It makes me feel good to see a great comic, but it's also it makes you feel like crap. You're like, dude, I'll never be that good. Oh, those jokes are brilliant, man.
Yeah. And that's what happens. You feel like I find myself seeking, you know, seeking that. I remember the first profound advice I ever got was from Rich Voss, because he basically said to me, he says, you know, there's going to come a day, you're a funny guy, you know, he goes, but there's going to come a day you're not telling jokes. You're just going to be up there saying things that are funny.
You gotta be more conversational.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta look around.
Be more fucking conversational.
And I always joke around. It's like, I don't know if it's a good idea to get advice from Rich Voss, but but one of the first jokes I wrote with that, it was a joke, was one of my open jokes. I walk out and go, I'm in a good mood because I fit in this coat. You know, it's just something you say, right? It's just it's written for a purpose, and I know why I wrote it. You know?
Well, how important is that first thing you say when you get up there? It's so important. And I, you know, speaking of things you've heard over the years, I've heard that the audience makes up its mind about you within like the first 15 seconds of you opening your mouth. So that first thing you say has got to be good. And there's been so many times where I tank a set because I think, oh, this is going to be good. I'm going to open with this. And then they just stare at you, you know? So it's very dangerous. But that first thing you do is so important, man.
Well, that being said, do you guys usually have an open, like, do you have a set outline that you're going to go up with and stick to, or do you kind of like bounce around a little bit based on what the audience is giving you? I mean, how much flexibility do you guys have in your act and presentation?
I'll take that. So I try to be, you know, I try to get new stuff in all the time, but I think that like, you know, just the importance of that first joke, knowing that. Because even like doing the festival stuff, when we have submissions, You know, it's the same, very true. So like we check out within a minute, like we're watching the whole video, but like we already know within that first minute if that person's going to get passed or not. And we have a list of 12 judges too. So like there's a whole bunch of tallies and all this other stuff. But like when these comedians like submit their sets and the first 20 seconds is the host and then the next 15 seconds of them like doing, you know, crowd work, whatever it is, it's like already, I'm already out of it. So like in a submission point, it's like, I want to, you know, get straight to the point. So like even at a show, I'm like almost the same way. It's like, okay, like who, like this person better like woo me from the bat. And you know, it's like, so I always try, for me, I always like the stories that I hold like most passionate or like the most like that I just like, just that bring me the most joy. I always like try to start off with that just cause like, that's like, it, to me, it always just seems like the most fresh and the most like, you know, like just if it's a killer joke, whatever it is, like, I just feel like that first joke is so important that I'm like, I want to do whatever is like I am most passionate about right now, because that's going to show on stage of like my excitement level is like when it, like, you know, telling the story. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always like to have a certain opener, and depending, and sometimes I like to, whoever's up before me, if it's a host or if it's somebody else in the contest, I like to transition if I can come up with something funny. I think I was at a comedy festival once and the guy before me was like 6'8". One of his jokes was like, everybody asked me if I'm in the NBA, you know. So my first
name, Travis.
I can't remember.
I can't think of his last name, but that's Travis. Yeah, I recognize the bit.
But there was
Travis Nelson, maybe. All right, go on. Anyway,
it was a black gentleman. He was tall. I know that. And
This was a white.
Yeah,
that's not bad the way I said that.
So he, he's all this stuff. So one of the first thing I came out and I looked at everybody and I just said, you know, you guys may not believe this, but you know, I play in the NBA and, you know, it just stupid.
It works, yeah.
It worked. And so, you know, but for the most part, there's an opening, you know, and there's a close, but what happens in the middle can always be a little different.
That's always my move too, is watching the guy in front of me and seeing if I can pull something from their act. Both the comic, like a couple of weekends ago, I was recording an album and both comics did that. All three of them called back, or two of them, the second two called back to the previous ones. And it just murders. It murders because it shows the crowd you've been paying attention. I think it also helps you, like, as a headliner to acknowledge that you like the person in front of you, because if they are doing that, we're picking favorites thing, you know, I think it's important for you to go up and go, hey, you know, I like that guy too. He was very funny, but here's what I'm going to do, you know, and it subtly lets them know that I'm on that guy's team. But I never really have a game plan when I go up there. I have enough material that I feel like I can remember enough to fill an hour. And that's really, and it's probably why I haven't advanced farther, but I really don't plan much. I just go and whatever I can remember, that's what I'll do. And I mean, sometimes it seems like there's an order to it, but it's not. And I'm terrible at writing things down. I'll think up a new bit. I'll do it for 3 months and I won't write it down and I'll just forget it. And I have a terrible memory, but my thought process is if it's a good bit, I'll remember it. If it's a really good bit, I'll remember it. If I forget it after 2 days, probably wasn't that good of a bit. And it also forces me to constantly be coming up with new stuff and improvising on stage because I can't think of things. I'll be like, oh God, I can't think of any of my jokes right now. So then that's when I'll try new stuff. I have some little thing that I scratch down on my phone. That's when I'll try that. But yeah, I used to have a plan in the beginning. I would have set lists and everything would be word for word. But again, in the idea that, like Phil was talking about earlier, about making it seem conversational, the more you move away from a plan, the more you move away from a set list, the more it starts to seem conversational. And audiences, I always say this too, audiences are so stupid. Like what we're doing is complete trickery. Like it's complete, we're carnies, they're rubes. We're fooling them into laughing. But they're inherently really smart at sniffing out when you're terrified. They're sniffing out when you're new, sniffing out when you're reciting material that you've memorized. Like for as much as they don't know, they know a lot that can hurt you on stage.
Yeah.
Just instinctively. And I think it's just because we're humans and we're used to sniffing out BS in people. So they can tell when you're full of it, you know?
Yeah. And I also think it's like almost like that. What you're saying is like the natural progression of a comedian. It's like when you first start out, you have to remember every tag, you have to remember every punchline, everything you want to say. And then after a set, if you look at your set list and you realize you missed like three of the punch or whatever you want, and then you're so hard on yourself, but then you realize that like the audience has no idea that you're going to say those things. So it's like, those are things that are just like, you know, to keep in mind, but it's also like, it's not make or break. Like you, like it, like sometimes you think that, oh man, if I would have said that, then they would have lost it. That would have been the kicker, but it may not have been either. You know what I mean? Like you can set and bombed, and then like that could have thrown off your confidence too. So it's like, it's almost like getting away, like almost like learning all the rules of comedy to unlearn them and like finding your voice. And as you grow, like, it's just like, yes, of course. Like, I think we've all had the, you know, all the notes and everything like that. It was just like, we want to hit everything down for that. But then like, when it comes down to it, it's just like, if you don't say something, you don't say something.
Some of the earliest advice my wife ever gave me was, I was like, in the early days, I had my 5-minute sheet in front of me, you know, and one of the improvs, comedy competitions or whatever it was. And I'm looking at it. My wife comes walking over. She goes, put that shit down. You're funny. Just go up and be funny. You know, you're doing 5 minutes, for God's sakes, you know?
Yeah, that's it. It is. It's an evolution, though. Like you said, in the beginning, you're afraid and you need all those extra tags. And we've all watched a comic do something that he's rehearsed, but the crowd has disconnected and they don't acknowledge it. And they never get them back because they're so stuck in the, I got to say this how I wrote it in my notebook. It's got to be like that. And it doesn't have to be like that. And again, it gets you farther away from being connected. And I hate to be all woo-woo and hippie on you, but there is a legitimate energy exchange between a comedian and a good show and a good audience. And like, it can ramp up. It can start out down here, and by the end, you're all way up here. And it doesn't happen with every audience because it's a different random collection of people. But that energy exchange is real, and you can't have it if you're just reciting material. Yeah. You have to be talking to the people.
Yeah,
you have to talk to them, not at them. And it's hard to do because you're terrified in the beginning.
Right. And I love that. I think that's a great statement that you just made, because like, I mean, that energy exchange is unreal, because there's times when I have had a great set and I've almost like blacked out I'm like, I want to remember every one of those things that I said, but it was because of the reaction and, you know, what people were saying and my reaction to what they were saying. It was almost like perfect setup punchline with the audience of just like this beautiful energy. And you're like, man, I got to remember this tag. I gotta remember all these things. But then it's like, after that moment, you're like, when you come down from the high, you're like, man, I don't even remember what happened. What happened in that show? But it was just like, you just know that it was just great. You just know that the people were so receptive of you. And that's what I think a beautiful comedy show is like, you know, it doesn't matter necessarily what you say, as long as that, like, you can feel that energy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what we live for, right?
That's
there.
Huge. And that kind of brings me to two. I think that makes me think of two things. Where that happens, right? Like when you're on stage and somebody says something and then it just causes you out of nowhere to come up with something. Like, there's nothing better to me than being on stage and making something up right there. You know, like something happens.
Basically how I write most of it, you know, in times of desperation. I'm like, oh, you better think of something. And there it is, you know.
And it's gold for that point forward, right? I mean, that's the best feeling. And then you have the opposite of that, where you know you have a line, or you have a joke, or there's something you that always gets a great reaction from somebody, and then you do it one night and you're like, nobody,
it's like nothing.
Did somebody not hear me? Did the mic, you know? And it's a weird thing to handle, you know. And
it's because you deliver it with a different level of confidence. You're so confident it's going to work that you just throw it out, and because you didn't try. Like like you could say one word. It can, even if it's a one word punchline, there's ways to say it differently. Like you care and like you don't care. And you said it like you didn't care because you thought it was going to work. And the audience doesn't believe it because you didn't believe it. It's such a weird exchange you have, man. That's why shows, like, people always complain about small audiences. Some of the best shows I've ever had are 15, 20 people in a room. And it's because it's easier to connect. There aren't any distractions. You're not distracted by all the people that may not like you. Like, it's just easier to connect with them. You can have amazing shows. So
that's awesome.
Some real hippie stuff, man.
Well, speaking of some hippie stuff, and I have some questions every once in a while in the beginning part of the show. I like to ask you guys questions and get your feelings on it. They're usually out of the blue, off from left field. But tell me, let's start with you, Phil, but who actually built the pyramids?
Oh, yikes. That's a great question. I mean, I do want to say some aliens, and I'm not talking about across the border. I'm talking about, you know, some help. Maybe it was like the people, maybe we built them, but we had some extra help. Maybe we had like some people who were coming in at night, or the aliens were coming in at night, and they're like, all right, let's give them a couple more bricks. You know, they only got three today, and then let's give them some more confidence. And then they kept building them, and they're like, the workers would come back and be like, oh my God, I don't even remember doing this work, but this is great.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody in Egypt had a lisp, so that's pretty good.
Yes, they did.
I didn't know the Egyptians were walking around like this. Oh, we got to pull more blocks.
Well, didn't they do? They did a lot of butt stuff back then, right?
I mean, I'm those Egyptians, I mean, they were weird.
Maybe if you knew that you had butt stuff waiting at home, you'd be more willing to go push some rocks up a pyramid.
Right.
Yeah, right. I think that
that's the second joke of mine that fell flat on YouTube, and I've had enough of it. All right, I'm sick of it. I'm going to blame it on the internet. It must be the time. It's the timing.
It's the lag, man. That lag is
that Zoom lag, man.
Yeah, you just so confident that we were going to crack up that you just didn't.
I was as confident in that as you were in your joke on stage that popped. Yeah, I was like, this one's going to murder. Watch this. I'm going to break Zoom with this one.
There you go. Well, I agree. I think they're, I love this, the TV show Ancient Aliens, you know what I mean? Could have Ancient Aliens help them build the pyramids? Ancient alien philosophers say yes. And why don't they say no ever? Well, that's good.
I think it was actually Phil hinted at, but I do think it was the Mexicans that come to this country illegally. I think they did it. So I think at the beginning, that one, I'm glad you guys laughed at, because that one could have got you canceled. Or me, for that matter.
The Pharaoh went over to Home Depot at the time and go, hey, you guys,
okay, Dougie, jump into the truck. Come on, man. That seems a little far. That's a little much.
Come on, I'm getting canceled. That's close. All right. Well, here's another question. Which one of your exes is the most memorable and why?
That's for Phil, right?
It's for both you guys, actually. So.
Oh.
Who do you think built the pyramids before we answer this question, Mike?
Me, I'm with you. I'm all in on aliens, man.
Okay, cool.
I can't see why. Although I did hear Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about, with all the photo taking technology we have nowadays, how are there no good photos of them? Which does make you wonder, you know, mm-hmm. because we have all these photos from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the blurry photos. In the age of everyone having a phone, if they exist, it feels like there'd be more believable videos and photos than blurry dots on screen still in 2021. But I still believe.
Well, nowadays we got, you know, Air Force and we got military video of these things that are, you know, I think they're Chinese, drones, supersonic drones.
Yeah, I believe that before. Honestly, I'd probably believe that before I believe aliens.
Yeah.
I want it to be aliens.
Yeah, me too.
That's and I want alien chicks to be into like 50-year-old middle-aged bald guys. That's my dream. Is there's a planet of hot chicks and they come here and they're only interested in worthless earthlings.
Wasn't that one of your first sexual fantasies? Like, you know, you think you get picked up by aliens, all these Amazonian aliens, and they bring
sounds like a Star Trek thing. Sounds like it might be a Star Trek.
I may have channeled some Star Trek episodes.
Well, there's a reason that was an episode on Star Trek, you know, because some writer has been thinking of that his whole life.
And you're laying on the bed and you're like, you're going to touch that? And, you know, that's always a good thing. Which one of your exes is the most memorable and why? I mean, I always answer, mine's very simple. I had an ex-girlfriend that was bisexual, so that got me into that, you know, explorative mode for about a year. And that's
only a year?
Yeah, about a year and a half, our relationship was all that.
Wow. I'll say mine is this girl I dated for 30 days. Her name was Michelena, which I've never even liked. I just love the name. And I met her leaving Vegas on an airplane. And she was, her stop was my layover. And we had just literally like, we had talked the whole time. And like when we were talking at the airport, I was just like, we were just like flirting. We're hitting it off. And I was like, hey, listen, like I should pretend like I'm your boyfriend so I could like, you know, like sit next to you. And she was like, I'm so about it. So like, we made this couple like move and they like, it shifted for us and we're holding hands. We're like kissing on the plane. I'm like, man, this is awesome. And then like, I mean, I thought it was like a great idea to ask her to be my girlfriend. And so like I did. And then like, I went off, I was actually on a comedy tour at that moment. And so like we were talking and then halfway through the tour, I ended up like flying out to see her. And like, we had a great time. It was everything that I've ever wanted. And then like 2 days later, she's like, I don't think this is going to work out. I was devastated. I was heartbroken. Oh. I thought that I had found the one, but I was like, it was probably just the biggest thing. But it was still just like the craziness of just like doing all that and only dating for 30 days. I was like, well,
she was married. She was married, Phil. That was the deal. She was married.
Yeah.
She carried it on and she couldn't. She moved on.
Yeah.
Or Phil's a horrible piece of ass. I mean, it could be that too. I mean, I mean, your hair is enraging. The fact that you have a full head of hair. I can't stand that. It's been bothering me the whole show.
I can tell you what conditioner I use if you want.
Oh, don't even. Now you're just being a jerk.
And he's in shape and he's tall. He's, you know, I mean, you know, that kind of stuff happens to a guy like that. Mike? Any, what's your?
I actually met the same girl on an airplane, so that's the reason.
Oh, she you guys date?
Well, I'm still with her, Phil.
Oh,
so there
wow.
you go.
Maybe you're the one that she left me for.
No, I would say my second girlfriend that like went away to college and swore she wouldn't leave me and then proceeded to leave me, and that's the one that taught me that, you know, women shouldn't be trusted and they're all evil, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Long story short.
I remember that relationship I had with one of them.
Yeah.
All right. Would you, next question, would you want to live forever?
No, I'm done already. I'm 49 and like another 5 years, seriously, maximum.
Got that.
Have you ever seen a happy old person? They don't exist. They're always complaining about some part of their body.
Right.
And I've already watched everything on Netflix. So what do I have to look forward to?
Good point.
Yeah, I would have to say that too. Like, so if I'm living forever, if I'm living like, yeah, maybe in my peak 20s forever, I would say, yeah, I would do it all day.
Good point.
Every day.
Good
but
point.
Like, if I'm going to be aging with the world, like, I don't know. I feel like at a certain point, like when all your family members die and everyone, like, you're alone and like you build these new relationships and then they die off. And then it's like this thing of like, you're like the only person left in the world because you're the, you know, been living through all these generations. I mean, that can get kind of sad and depressing, I feel like.
Yeah, because life is sad and depressing anyway. You want to make it longer?
Well, yeah, so I guess you're right. So I guess the philosophy is you wouldn't want to live longer if you have a lot more negative type things happen in your life.
Yeah, but if I was 25 and got to bang 25-year-olds the rest of my life, then yeah, I'll live forever.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
That's like the vampire immortality aspect, right? Like you're always in that, you know, in that sexy vampire mode where you're banging everybody and not the geriatric mode. All right. Well, here's what we're going to do. We got some time left. I want to go into our segment called The News is a Joke. We all know that. I don't know if you guys ever use topical humor, but sometimes I do like to use some of the news to bring up some of the topics or actually jokes. But here's our first story. Heinz starts petition to make hot dogs and buns come in equal packs. Finally.
I mean, haven't we been waiting for that forever? Why do they do that?
Yeah.
Why do they want to ruin the material of hundreds of 80s comics by changing that? Yeah. There's no reason to change that.
The first thing I thought when I read the story.
And by the way, it makes you buy more buns or more hot dogs. One of the two. I don't remember which one has more, but it causes you to buy more of the other. So it's a marketing scheme.
Yeah, I think there are usually more hot dogs, right? Because there's usually 12 probably in a pack, and there's only 8 usually hamburger or hot dog buns.
Do you think there was like a backdoor deal? Like the bun people got together with the hot dog people. They're like, here's what we got to do to drive up sales.
Yeah. I mean, who hasn't like eaten a hot dog and a piece of bread? You know, like you get stuck at, oh, I got to eat. How come everybody gets a bun and I get a piece of bread? You know, or have you ever made a sandwich with a hot dog bun?
Absolutely.
I'm the same.
Yeah. You know, I grew up poor. I've made a sandwich with everything. Every flat surface food I've made some sort of a sandwich with.
Yeah.
I can't think of any examples of flat food, but.
Or maybe maybe their whole philosophy was like, you know, let's put these 8 buns in here because there's guaranteed at least 4 people who are on the Atkins diet and they just don't eat gluten. So,
is there less buns or more? Which one is it? More hot dogs?
More hot dogs.
Less buns, more hot dogs. Okay. All right, carry on.
I'm having trouble. Sounds like a terrible party too. Like, exactly. We should reverse that if anything.
Yeah. By the way, how old are the people at this party? 9? Why are we having hot dogs at a party? 2021.
When's the last time you ate a hot dog, Mike?
It's been years, man. And probably I was probably at a baseball game. That's probably the last 8 hot dogs I've eaten in my life were probably at a baseball game.
What baseball games?
Yeah.
Hot dog or hamburger? Which one's preferable?
I gotta go hamburger.
Hamburger all day.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm getting hungry, so I'm gonna get off the subject. All right. We just had a contest at July 4th. That guy.
Oh, yeah. The
77 Chestnut. Jeez, he's the GOAT.
76 is what he got.
Oh, 76.
Yeah.
Okay. 70 in San Francisco, Gay Men's Chorus faces backlash for recording a music video that they're coming for your children video.
So their video was that they're coming for your children?
They actually had a video of the choir singing a song that, you know, we're here to influence them. See some of the "We'll Convert Your Children" happens bit by bit, quietly and subtly, and you will barely notice it.
You'll keep kind of like it. I kind of like that. That's pretty funny.
You'll keep them from, you can keep them from the disco, warn about San Francisco, make them wear pleated pants. We don't care. We'll convert your children. We'll make them tolerant and fair.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm on board with that.
So what's the name of the group?
A San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Didn't give them a name.
I'd imagine there's a lot of San Francisco Gay Men's Choruses.
Yeah, I imagine her down.
There's not just one.
Yeah, no, there's many.
Like one of them.
Yes.
Well, people are mad about everything. It seems like those guys just did that to be silly and to make the type of people mad that would be mad about that type of thing, you know? But people with a sense of humor and, you know, some common sense, I think, shouldn't be upset about something like that.
It's definitely it's a poking measure.
Yeah, they're just doing it to be provocative.
About poking the bear. Later, the lyrics continue. We'll convert your children. Someone's got to teach them not to hate. We're coming for them. We're coming for your children. We're coming for them. We're coming for them. We're coming for your children.
I think they could have found a different word besides coming. Like, I think, could you find a different hook? It seems a little aggressive.
Yeah.
A little too on the nose.
I think that's what really frustrated.
Are they going to convert my kids, or are they jerking off to my kids?
I mentioned this, and I can share this. This is a personal experience. I'm not just being like a homophobe or when it comes to that. But I mentioned my girlfriend being bi, right? The last year and a half relationship, and I can tell you that a lot of the girls, like, you know, in that community, they wanted to get her. I mean, there was moments like they would go to these parties and stuff. She'd go to the party, and I go, hey, you're coming? She's like, oh no, well. You know, she's been partying. She's going to stay with us. I'm like, no, I'm going to come pick her up. You know what I mean? I'm like, no, duh. You know, there was like, I almost got into a fight with one girl because she was trying to bang my girl. You know what I mean?
She's a lesbian, so she probably would have kicked your ass.
Perhaps. But
right. Can I'd you like even make these jokes anymore? I don't know. You're probably going to have to edit that part out.
Yeah, we're probably going to. No, but she probably could, matter of fact, because I would never hit a girl. I mean, I would just have to sit there and take the blows.
Oh, I'd hit a girl.
Yeah?
Yeah, for little or no reason. Just for fun. Just for fun.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. They can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
All right. I probably shouldn't have added that last part.
Another edit.
We got to go back on that one. Well, there you go. All right. The next story. Now, here's the thing. A herd of drunk Indian buffaloes. I didn't know there was regular non-Indian buffaloes. I consider most buffalo Indian. A herd of drunken Indian buffaloes exposed a hidden stash of contraband liquor and got a group of farmers arrested. So a bunch of Indian buffaloes show up drunk into town.
Why are they Indian buffalo? And aren't they bison in this country and not buffalo?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Why are we calling them Indian buffalo?
Three Indian farmers were arrested for selling illegal alcohol after a herd of buffaloes got drunk on their...
Oh, it's the Indians buffalo.
Yes.
That's why we're saying it like that.
I didn't know there was...
Oh, let these bison have a good time. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, man. Yeah, I think we should get more animals drunk, right? Could you imagine cats wasted on vodka? That'd be awesome.
I'm just glad the buffalo didn't find my cocaine stash. Turns out the bottles of liquor had been hidden in a trough. Three tipsy buffaloes blew the cover of an illegal stash in India after getting drunk from water in a trough that hid the moonshine bottles.
And go to one of those police stops or something like that? They're crossing the field and they were like, no, okay, get the sobriety test in.
There's a sobriety checkpoint. That's how they got them.
Dang, I told you to go the other way.
Cop pulls over the Indian buffalo. How much have you had to drink? Tapping his hoof. One of the farmers had called a vet when the buffalo stopped eating and started frothing at the mouth.
How would you do a sobriety test on a buffalo? Would you like put a fat white tourist in front of them and have them run at it and see if they could hit them? If they miss them, then they're drunk or?
Yeah. You're right. What would be the alcohol test on a buffalo? Do they walk straight? I don't know. Make them recite the alphabet. But good. Like I said, I'm just glad they didn't find my other stash.
Good luck getting a urine sample from one, huh? Hey guys. All right.
Yeah. A breathalyzer. I don't
know
if you guys
taste good too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's been marinated. It's been a bit
better. Buffalo.
Now here, what I thought was interesting there is moonshine in India. I didn't realize that it's gotten out of Kentucky and in the certain rural areas.
Isn't that just a human thing? Like making your own hooch? That's been around forever. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. They did it on MASH. I know Hawkeye and Pierce made their own hooch.
Oh. How old are you, Dougie? Jeez, you're giving MASH references?
I know. That was right after
watching. What did they do on the Mayflower? Like, jeez Louise.
And it was right after watching Good Times. Now, sometimes in I don't know if you guys athletes played football. I think Phil, you played sports.
Football and wrestled.
Phil looks like he played sports.
Yeah, he looks like he just got done playing sports.
Looks like he's wearing a singlet right now.
Yes. I usually wear that to keep my high school days alive. But actually, I used to compete in strongman competitions.
No kidding.
So yeah.
Wow.
A couple Very of my cool. day.
I take back all the negative things I've said to you today. I had no idea you had the ability to kill me.
I'll see you at your house, Mike.
Or at least throw me over a wall or whatever you guys do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You do a lot of that.
Yeah. You'll run me over with a bus that you're pulling with a rope. That's how you fight. That's the only way a strong man can fight.
He'll drop
off. Oh, let me go flip this tire real quick.
Hang on. Get on the other side of this tire, bro. Yeah. It's on.
He'll drop an anvil on your head like it's an Acme commercial.
Another modern reference, Doug.
Thank you again. Yeah,
very good.
But being in wrestling, you know, I was a fighter. I actually was a professional Thai boxer.
I take back everything I've said to you. Yeah, then
that's
as
why.
Well.
That's why I threw it in there, smartass.
I'm the now, biggest I'm, pussy in the bunch here. I've done nothing. I've been in three fights and I've won all three.
You mentioned wrestling, and they're all women, but that was besides the point. you know, there were three girls who beat their ass. You mentioned in wrestling because I used to train in ground fighting and people. But in wrestling, sometimes your hands can go certain places, you know. And you know, I've seen wrestling matches, heard wrestling matches where the guy will end up sticking his finger up a guy's ass, mm-hmm. you know, trying to get you know like a dirty move. And
checking the oil, right? Isn't that what they call that? Checking the oil.
That's right. In Huddersfield Edwards, 10-match player from Edwards, I guess it's a Australian rules team got a 10-match suspension for inserting a finger into an opponent.
Wow.
Or Kenny Edwards has been banned for 10 matches for putting his finger up the bottom of an opponent. And New Zealand's, like a rugby type game, like rugby rules.
Wow. Was that his game plan the whole time? I'm going to goose everyone.
He couldn't get it in his urethra, so he went for butthole.
Yeah.
That's like joke number four you guys have given.
How were the refs on this one? They like did all the competitors to go up to the refs and be like, hey, there's something weird. This guy keeps like sticking his finger in my ass.
Yeah.
We'll watch out for that.
I know. Edwards was charged by the Rugby Football League match review panel with a grade F offense, the most serious available to it. The other contrary behavior, and referred to the independent tribunal, which handed out the punishment following a hearing when the man who had his finger shoved up his ass showed up and farted with nobody hearing it. The Catalans team, Joel Tompkins, was suspended for 8 games for a similar offense last year. Let's see what he did. Yeah, we're stuck. They like sticking fingers up people's ass. Oh, he grabbed the guy's testicles.
Oh, okay.
Now I've seen that in football. When I played young kid football, I remember that happened. You're in a scrimmage, you know, everybody's tackle and you reach and you grab the guy's butt and squeeze his balls while he's, you know, on the ground. I mean, that happens in real NFL. I mean, there's been situations like that.
One of the first few UFCs, there was a guy that grabbed the other guy's dick and balls and twisted it. And then another guy, he had him in some sort of a hole, and the guy had one arm free, so he just starts punching the other guy in the dick, like repeatedly, just punch. And the guy's not wearing a cup; he's just punching him in the dick, and that was like an okay move. So you could just look up UFC punching in the dick; it's hilarious.
Yeah, back in the original days of UFC, where there was no rules, remember that?
I remember there was a guy came in with a ponytail on top of his head, and the other guy took it and wrapped it around his hand and held onto his ponytail and just kneed his face over and over, and the guy could do nothing because he put a handle on his head.
Yeah. Wow. Those early days weren't smart. Like the guy would come out with boxing gloves, right?
One boxing glove.
Yeah. He'd have like a 12-ounce glove on.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to protect the opponent from getting hurt, you stupid? Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Moving on. toy advertised as a friendly, kid-friendly toy in Taiwan, sings Polish rap songs and talks about cocaine. So I don't know if you saw the photo. It's like a little cactus, and they sell it in Taiwan, and it sings songs. And then somebody finally translated the songs and say in Polish, they said, hey, you know what they're saying? Oh, aren't they talking about kids and dancing? No, they're talking about rapping and doing cocaine.
I love it.
I like it. Yeah, I like that's it. Great. I think that we need less PC stuff and whatever. Like, get these kids the, you know, most effed up toys, and they don't even know. Like, that's perfect. That's great.
I think the main thing is we need more Polish rappers. I mean, I can't even. When was the last Polish rapper we had? You know, I'm trying to think of Polish rapper jokes. Like, I'm just trying to think of the. What's the opposite of having bitches and jewelry? I don't know what the opposite of that is, but that's what a Polish rapper would talk about, I guess. I live in a modest home and I drive an electric vehicle.
Having a rash and playing with plastic. Tourmaker claims a dancing cactus can stimulate imagination and creativity in children, while another online baby product site describes it as a good device for toddlers.
Wait, say it again? Read that again?
Says the toy makers claim that the dancing cactus can stimulate imagination and creativity in children, while another online baby product site describes it as a good device for toddlers.
Wow. I mean, like, I think Polish rappers should be our influence for children, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean not that black rappers are doing a bad job, but let's mix it up a little bit. Let's show them there's... You know, I can't just keep playing that Vanilla Ice album over and over for him. I need some other examples.
Yeah, and we know the words that our urban rappers, our black rappers use. I just wonder what the Polacks, you know, are saying.
Oh, you mean?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Thank God the internet froze up while I said that.
Oh yeah,
that could have gone horribly.
There is
wrong.
No proof. There is no proof he said that. Everybody. Yeah, and let's see this story. The driver choking on a baggie of pot saved by troopers, Heimlich maneuver.
Wow.
I'm choking. Come here. No, don't pull me up.
You're supposed to take it out of the bag before you eat it.
You know, I mean, I remember the days, you remember, I don't know if like you were drinking when you were underage in high school or something like that, a cop would pull up, you'd like get rid of the beer and or whatever, you know, and, I remember one time being with my friends and the guy was throwing the weed out the car, man. And my buddy beat the shit out of him because it wasn't a cop car. It was one of those, you know, and it was like, and you threw all our weed out. I remember being in Mexico at a strip club and having a bag of that with me and doing it in the male bathroom. And somebody knocked on my door and said, give me your cocaine.
Oh, man, that would have been terrifying.
Yeah. And I immediately flushed it down the toilet, of course. And, it came out and I go, I don't have it. So I had to give the guy $50 to go to a Mexican prison.
I got pulled over once. I had a buddy in the car. He had weed and he had a scale, one of those old metal scales that you would weigh like postage with. And as the lights came on behind us, he panicked, rolled the window down and threw the scale in the bag out the window. But the scale is chrome. So the cop's lights like just made this huge like sheen right off of it. You could see it plain as day. And the cop walked up. He's like, I saw what you threw out of that. Like he knew right away. He could see it plain as day. But yeah,
you panic. You know, you don't know any better when these kind of things happen. Yeah, it says here an Ohio trooper jumped into action when the driver choked on a baggie of marijuana. Video shows. I mean, it's not even a bad offense. Like if you get it caught most anywhere, you just get a ticket for $100.
One time I was working with this guy, Jared Dog. You ever heard of Jared Dog? He's a comedian. Jared Dog, the mighty Jared Dog. Anyway, good dude. We do a show together. We're driving home after the gig. I'm hammered. I assume he's hammered. We get pulled over because he stops in the middle of the road to look at a map. This is how long ago it was. He had to look at a map. And cop pulls us over, takes him back to the squad car. I'm assuming we're going to jail. So I ate all my weed. I ate all the weed that I had. He comes back up to the car, gets in, and we just starts driving away. I'm like, what the? How'd you get away with that? He's like, I didn't drink tonight. I'm completely sober. I'm like,
oh no!
I just ate all my weed, dude. I just ate everything, man.
Dang.
Now was story. Was this old weed with seeds, or was this recently the?
Well, I cleaned it. There was no stems and no seeds, so I never traveled with stuff that needed to be cleaned. Allegedly,
yeah.
Back in the day,
And how'd you feel after that? Anything?
No, it turns out I thought it affected me, but I found out years later that you can't get high by just eating marijuana, because it has to, you have to release the cannabinoids by getting it up to a certain temperature or some nerdy science thing, but you can't just eat weed and get high. But I felt like I was high at the time.
There was a guy right now.
But that could be because I was high at the time.
Yes, he didn't realize it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll happen. Yeah, well, good for him. And our last story, India is proposing a two-child policy to keep its population under control, and it includes cash benefits for couples who opt for sterilization.
Oh, shit. Now, is it going to be mandatory like China, though? Like, are they going
to... Remember what happened in China when they did that. Now there's a bunch of men in China that don't have girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have a societal issue there. And that's why.
And honestly, I thought China was doing the right thing. Like, I mean, we do need less women, but they went too far with it.
Well, they, it was the population, right? Because every Chinese.
All right, guys, that's joke number five, and you guys just staring at me over and over is really getting annoying.
No, I'm telling you,
Phil's staring between that luscious, right between that luscious head of hair he's got there. He's got the pieces over his eye, like he's a model.
Man.
It's like he's hating me from the cover of Men's Health magazine.
You disgusting. Well, yeah, you want to try it again? Never mind.
I already forgot it.
Well, that's, that's obviously, we know the news, right? Like in China, they want a boy, so the Chinese would have a girl, and what they do, they kill the baby.
Mm-hmm.
They would actually get rid of it, and then they would know what. So you have legions of men in China that are committing suicide because they don't have companionship.
Well, and they also have tiny penises too.
Yes, that's
there's a lot of factors there
because they're Chinese. Yes. That's got to factor in.
Yeah. But you're right, and but to pay money now, you have children. You have a couple boys, right, Mike? If I remember.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, 14 and 10. Yeah.
Nice.
And I've sterilized myself. So I should. Yeah, I got the snippity snip. Best damn thing I ever did. Should have done it when I was 20.
Yeah. You don't got a good pull-out game?
No, I do.
Yeah.
It was just a blatant insult towards my children. I don't know why I said that, but yeah. I love my kids. I'm glad I had them.
They won't listen to this podcast yet.
That's true. Nobody will.
Now, Phil, you can't have kids with hair like that.
I'm staying single.
There you go. And how old are you now, Phil?
30. Just turned 30.
All right. That was my best year because I just bought a nice big house when I was 30. I was making six figures.
Damn.
You know what I mean? I was loving life at 30.
I haven't made six figures total in my life.
It's nice. Well, there you go. Cool. So that's all we have time for here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show.
I feel great. I feel like we covered a lot of news.
Yeah.
Covered a lot of news. We covered a lot of comedy.
There was at least three or four things in there that could get any one of us canceled. I mean, probably I'll get canceled and you guys will get canceled by association.
Right.
Because you didn't stick up. You didn't stick up for the whatever group it was I was insulting.
Let me ask you that, because I just had this conversation with somebody, and this was going back to last summer. And I had a comic that said to me, hey, your silence is just the same as not saying anything.
Nah, I think you can be silent. I don't have to inject myself into every argument.
Is that true? Like you don't have, like, you, even if you have an opinion of something, you just may not, you don't want to share it because.
What does that get you? What does sharing your opinions get you? Likes from other people? I mean, I'm not. It's such a weird thing we live with now with the social media and stuff. It's like,
let me ask you that. How important is it to do that? Because during this whole thing, it was funny because somebody mentioned this to me is like, by your material, by my material, people just assume I'm Republican, I'm red, and I'm a Trump guy, and all this kind of stuff. Which I am Republican, I am conservative, you know. And that's why it was funny when I was in Stir Crazy. I was like, wow, this is definitely not Portland.
Well, funny if you're a normal person. If you're a normal person and can, listen to things that may upset you and not be a Karen and write a bad comment card. You should be able to listen to things.
Are you guys seeing that change? Are you guys starting to see that kind of? Because I remember I felt like it was worse at some point. I feel like it's kind of maybe lightening up. Do you see that changing in our field?
I do actually, yes. I mean, the past like 5 or 6 months, I feel like the shows I've been to, a lot more people have been receptive to anything that's been spoken about, like just because I think that people just want to be entertained. And so I think that like comedy is always taking a shift, but I do think there was like a hard shift where people were so sensitive and could not, like, you know, anything you would say would just get you canceled. But now I feel like because we were so extreme and so sensitive, now the opposite end of the spectrum is like starting to shine. And I think that, like, you know, people are going to be like more lighthearted and ready to just for, you know, just for fun. And like, that's, you know, that's really the point of comedy. You know, everyone who is offended at a comedy show is like, you know, you don't really belong there anyway. Just because, like, you know, no comedians on stage, like, I can't wait to tear down every race and, you know, do all this stuff. It's like, well, that's not our goal. You know, the goal is to make light of every hardship that we all share and, you know, just make it relatable. And it's like, you know, it's you know, sometimes it's just funny. You know, stereotypes are funny. Something, you know, all that stuff, if you can just, like, take it with you know, joy or whatever, that's like, no one's up there trying to, like, bring you down. We're just trying to, like, bring everyone up the same level, if anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think audiences lately have been great because they're mostly right wing audiences, because everybody on the left is still afraid to leave the house. So I feel like that was another joke. God, you guys,
yeah,
really.
No, you gotta smile out of me.
I don't know.
It takes me a second because I realize after you say it, I'm like, okay, that was good. And then it's already too late.
Yeah.
With the internet lag and then like.
No, but I do feel there's some truth to that. Like right now, I feel like you can, because it is, you know, I mean, again, I'm not either side. I'm like you, Dougie, but I feel like a lot of the people that are coming out right now aren't afraid. And that seems like that'd be the people on the right. And so you seem like you can get away with more. But once the, you know, the lefties and the Karens start coming back out, then it'll go back to normal.
And like you mentioned, Phil, I think that is, I definitely seen like my shows down here, they're selling out. You know, you're definitely seeing it, just the eagerness to get out there and be entertained. I think that is overshadowing the political correctness that we were dealing with. I definitely think that's a huge thing.
Didn't we have enough of the back and forth fighting the last year while we're all sitting at home? Every one of these people, once they leave the house, they're like, I don't want to hear about any of that shit. Just tell some jokes and make me laugh. And yeah.
Great point. Well, we hope that that's what people are going to do. With that being said, Mike, anything, what's coming up on your end that you want to tell some people
about? I'll be in Vegas last week of August, but the big thing for me is the 8 albums on Pandora. The more people I get to subscribe on Pandora and give me thumbs up and all that crap.
You said 8 albums now?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's just the same album made over and over and over. It's the same 9 jokes, but.
I like it though.
No,
new title card.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all up there. 20% of it's good, but you know, enjoy it.
That's awesome. I want to get to that point because somebody says, you have an album yet? I'm like, no, I just really want to get that hour, whatever it is, and just have it be that. And then boom, I got the name of it. I got the name of my album.
What's that?
Don't
you share it, or are you going to keep it?
I'll share it. I Mean No Harm.
No, that's great. Someone's going to steal perfect. It.
Yeah,
I already stole it.
It online, man. You gotta edit that out.
That's kind of funny. That's the name of my next album.
Oddly enough,
kind of cool.
You already am recording for it too. Yep. So like,
whoever gets it out first, that's who gets the name, bro.
And he's got the same 9 jokes from the first album.
Darn right, I do. I'm not gonna write new ones.
Phil.
Yeah, I have a comedy special out right now called "Who Am I to Say No?" It's on YouTube. Very excited about that. Trying to get some traction on that. But I did just direct my first comedic web series that we are releasing in January called The Edward Chronicles. So nice. I'm excited about that one.
Awesome. Well, there you go. Please, as our listeners and viewers, follow these folks. They're very funny. I look forward to seeing you guys at a comedy festival or a comedy contest, and we'll get to scream at each other for fucking losing or something. Who knows?
We can cry together. We can all cry together.
That's big, how it big is. Hug.
Matter of fact, I will be at the World Series of Comedy at the House of Comedy coming up at the end of the month.
Nice.
So if you're going to be in that area, that'll be fun. And and I'm going to be at Stir Crazy featuring in the first weekend of October.
Oh, that's awesome. So we'll definitely be linking up in the future.
Yeah, it'll be fun. But other than that, guys, thanks for joining us. Everybody, don't forget to follow our show on Twitter at Wake Up Dougie and on Instagram at The Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. You can follow me at Dougie Dangerous on Instagram. And, of course, because I got kicked off by some liberal skank of Twitter on my old Dougie Dangerous. I'm now at Funny Fiduciary on Twitter. That's it. Thanks for joining us, everybody. God bless. And we hope to see you here at the same spot next time. Take care.
All right. Thanks for having me.
See you.